the contact. Can I actually ask that we start, Andre, Secretariat?
Chair, I will start calling out the names of the members, Chair, to confirm the attendance. Ms. Mantashe, Chair?
Honorable Mantashe.
I am present, and good morning to everyone.
Thank you. Good morning.
Mrs. Hermans, Chair?
Honorable Hermans.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning. Welcome. Good morning.
Mrs. Mutahung, Chair.
Honorable Mutahung.
Good morning, everyone. Present.
Good morning. I can hear that you're commuting as well.
Mrs.
Good morning.
Mwatse, yes. Chair.
Well, Honorable Mwatse. Honorable Mwatse.
She was on the platform, Chair.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. Mr. Thring, Chair.
Honorable
good morning,
Thring.
Members. Good morning, Chair. Also note, I'm using another laptop, but it is me that is here.
No, we can see
I
you.
I saw the name, yes.
I saw, he's visible as well. Thank you very much, Honorable Thring. Good
Chair,
morning.
Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honorable Mulder.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone.
Honorable Mulder, good morning.
Chair, Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Honorable Cuthbert.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning and welcome.
For those other members currently on the platform, Chair, I do have two apologies, Chair. Can I do the apologies now, Chair?
Please.
Okay, Chair. I have an apology for Mr. McPherson, who's still busy with party business for the rest of the week, Chair. And Mr. Mbuyani, who will be joining the committee later today, Chair.
Okay. So let me just say for the number of members that's recorded, We do have the representative group to be able to start the meeting.
Chair, we have a quorum, Chair, but we can also start with four members if there is four members on the platform, Chair. But we are fully curated, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let me just say we would actually try, Secretariat, maybe in the next few days to look at how our program for the part between now and when we go on recess on how we actually get that organized. There are priority issues, but I'm sure at MENCOM we can actually have some discussion around that. So I'm just saying for the portfolio committee, we do actually have an agenda. If you can put it up so that we can be able to have a look at that, scroll it a bit up. Thank you very much. We have dealt with the apologies. Let's look at the issue of the adoption. We will be getting a briefing on the national IP policy. It's phase one and the implementation. And I think there's issue relating to further development. There will be phases and policy development, which we can look at that item. Scroll down. We do actually will have questions, comments, and clarity after the presentation. We do actually have set of minutes for October mainly that we should be able to look at. I'm sure members did receive the copies of the minutes. Then we are actually going to look at closure. But on the point I've made earlier, that there will be a bit of administrative planning from the chair to look at how far we go. There are specific issues that we have to look at and give an update. Can we then ask members to give an indication if they are comfortable to proceed on the agenda as proposed?
Chair?
Honorable Watse?
Chair?
Yes, can you hear me?
Andre?
I can hear you, Honorable Watse.
We can hear you. We can hear you, Ms. Mwatse.
Honorable Mwatse?
Yes, Chair Morning.
I
move for adoption of the agenda as presented.
Thank you very much. Let's actually get, if ever there's any seconder, to Honorable Mwatse.
Good morning, Chair.
Mrs. Hermans, Chair.
Okay, Hermans. Honorable
Hermans. Good morning, Chair. Let me second the adoption as the... second the adoption of the agenda as presented. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me check. Is there no objection? In the absence of any objection, can we then proceed with the agenda as presented and accepted? Let me just say, maybe Secretariat speak to the issue which are linked to the presentation. I
Chair,
think, yes.
You speak to the subject matter, Chair.
Oh, okay, definitely. Thank you very much, Secretariat. So I think one did say the briefing of the National IT Phase 1 and the implementation thereof, as well as the development of further policy phases. So which means we still have a lot of work that we have to follow through on this program. The purpose of the briefing is to provide clarity on how Phase 1 of the National IT policy is being implemented, including legislative amendment, roles and responsibilities within the DTIC and the CIPC, and the progress in this regard. Furthermore, this provides a brief update on the progress of other phases of the policy and the clarity the responsibility program is in this regard. Texts in terms of during the fifth parliamentary process, the intellectual property function has been split between the CCRD and the former International Trade Economic Development Program. This led to the latter being responsible for the policy development, while the former developed legislation and implemented policy on other aspects. As a result, a policy gap may have inadvertently developed, as there is uncertain about the translation of the IP policy into law. A case in point is the first phase of the National IP policy, focusing on the phase of the National IP focusing on patent, where the policy provides for the patent examiner, but the legislation has not been amended to support this. While the implementation agency, CIPC, has begun to plan to implement the patent examination, this situation can result in mismanagement resources as well as uncertainty of the market. So let me just say that's the bigger part. I'm sure when the ambassador leads the team this morning, we can be able to get more clarity. We do actually have our ambassador that will be speaking to us, DDG, who will be actually Ambassador Karim. We will actually have as well for the trade policy negotiation and cooperation, because that's the team the ambassador is leading. We do actually have Ms. Kruger. We also have Mr. Elizabeth van Rienen. We do actually have also a IP law person, Mr. Marumo Ngomo, who will actually be part of the delegation led by Ambassador Karim, who's our DDG. So can I actually then introduce and open Secretariat, unless maybe there's a point you'd like to... Yes, Secretariat?
Just to submit an apology from Ms. Yaku. She's also attending to party business, Chair, which I received while we were talking on the platform, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. So I'm sure with the agenda, we will actually invite Ambassador Karim, DDG, to be able to speak to us. And I'm sure one has actually indicated that there's a team supporting the ambassador. Can we take the ambassador to take us through? Welcome, Ambassador Karim, and the team, if you can speak to us. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Chairman. Good morning to you, and good morning to all of the honorable members. Thank you for giving us the opportunity for this briefing on intellectual property on our intellectual property policy, phase one, and just to outline where we are in the development and implementation of the policy. As you've indicated, I have a number of colleagues that are here with me supporting me today, and I'm happy to proceed with the presentation. If we could move on. The next slide is generally the acronyms that are used in the presentation, and this is for members' information. The presentation itself, we cover the background, how the policy document paper has been produced, what was the background to that, what are the objectives of the policy. We speak a little bit about the Interministerial Committee on Intellectual Property that is providing oversight over the development of the policy. We then focus on some of the two immediate issues that we are concerned with. But we also have a built-in agenda, a set of items on which we plan to do further work in future. And then the end of the week, round off the presentation by talking about a few slides on immediate implementation steps. So as far as background goes, the Cabinet in 2008 mandated the DTI, at that time now DTIC, to lead in the development of a national intellectual property policy. In 2013, a draft, a national IP policy was approved by Cabinet, but after further consideration in 2016, Cabinet approved a framework for enhanced consultations. There was a view that we needed to strengthen the consultative process around the development of the policy document, both at an intergovernmental level and with stakeholders, and so there was a framework proposed to Cabinet, which was adopted in 2016. And in August 2016, this framework for consultations was gazetted for public comment. A little less than a year later, the document itself, following those consultations, a draft IP policy document was gazetted for public comment. And then a year later, in May 2018, Cabinet approved the IP policy phase one. The policy objectives set out in the document essentially provides a framework and a set of guidelines for policy development and legislation and amendments on IP matters. So it's framed in a broad manner and it gives some direction to the way that the policy could give direction to legislation. So it provides a kind of an overall framework and a direction. It's premised on the ethos and the direction provided for in the South African Constitution, notably amongst others, the Bill of Rights, Section 25 on expropriation that protects citizens against arbitrary deprivation of property, including with respect to intellectual property rights. Importantly, it also provides direction on the basis of Section 27 of the Constitution, which provides for the progressive realization of the right to health. Of course, there are many other aspects of the Constitution come into play, but these are perhaps some of the most notable. We can move on. So the objectives, as I mentioned, include the need to promote public health, but they also aim to ensure that we stimulate innovation across South Africa. And in doing so, we're also looking to ensure that there's an appropriate balance between providing the kind of intellectual property protection that encourages innovation, but at the same time ensuring that the dissemination of the benefits from those innovations are shared in society more broadly. So in effect, what this means is finding the appropriate balance between the rights of owners of intellectual property and the users of those products and services developed through intellectual property right protection. We're trying to foster an environment that encourages investment, but also encourages technology diffusion. In thinking through the policy, it was important that we tried to ensure that the intellectual property regime increasingly is aligned with the National Development Plan, and in particular with the objectives that we have in South Africa to promote industrial development, so to find the linkages between IP and industrial policy. And at this point that I've made earlier, in the earlier slide, IP protection encourages innovation, and we recognize that, but we also recognize that an overly restrictive application of intellectual property right protection can lead to monopolies, can lead to concentrated markets, and that can make it difficult for new entrants into the market to participate in the wider development of the market. So the key point in all of these is to find an appropriate balance between protection and dissemination of intellectual property. So we're seeking to promote innovation, we're seeking to promote research and development, but we're also seeking to ensure that technology is transferred to broaden participation in the industrial economy and to promote growth. For example, one would want to try to promote the creative industry, to protect the creative industry, but also to encourage the development and the broadening of the creative industry by enhancing access into the industry. We could move on. Another important dimension of the policy in the document is the importance of strengthening intra-government coordination on IP matters. We want to ensure that the national approaches that we develop and the policy direction that we take at a national level, including with respect to legislation, is also coordinated and aligned with the approaches that we would be taking in bilateral engagements that we have, at a regional level, the engagements at that level, say for instance on the African continent, but also at the international level in international organizations. And at the same time, we need to ensure that our legislation is consistent with South Africa's international obligations, legal obligations and international norms. In 2016, as was mentioned, Cabinet established the Interministerial Committee on Intellectual Property, and this is the body that oversees the development, intergovernmental body that oversees the development of IP and IP policy, and it's aiming to enhance coordination across government departments, given the fact that IP cuts affects and has implications for many different government departments. So this committee serves as the core drafting team for the policy. It serves as oversee, as I mentioned, it oversees the development of the policy and also the implementation. The committee comprises 11 departments. The DTIC convenes the committee. The 11 departments are there. I hope it's 11, it may be 12. But in any case, as the policy evolves, we sometimes have to make adjustments, invite other departments in if on a needs basis. This is the core of the committee. The first priority in phase one that we'd identified is the importance of public health and addressing public health concerns in South Africa. And the policy is aimed at trying to ensure that we encourage greater local the manufacturing of medicines, of devices and diagnostics related to the health sector. And we're doing this by reviewing in particular the type of patentability criteria and the need to examine all the exceptions that are available in order to ensure that there's greater domestic a production. Of course, under the pandemic, all of this policy direction has become even more important. A second element of the policy direction is to provide clarity in our legislation for parallel imports, to allow South Africa to import medicines, in particular from other jurisdictions where those medicines are being produced at a much cheaper level. And this was envisaged in the Medicines and Related Substance Act, and we want to try to implement it through the revision amendments to the Patents Act. We're also seeking to ensure that the compulsory licenses provisions that are in the Patents Act are brought in line with international best practice, drawing on recent experience as international debate and legal framework has evolved. We want to take those into the South African framework, and so that we use all the flexibilities that are available in our international obligations, again, with a view to encouraging provision of medicines to South Africans at an affordable rate. We're also looking to introduce some exceptions to patent protection in South Africa, particularly for research and experimental purposes as part of the overall development of our scientific base and to encourage innovation in future. We could move on. Again, linked to this work is the introduction, which is proposed in the policy document for a substantive search and examination requirement process at the CIPC to ensure that when we grant patents only when they meet the standard of genuine innovation. We've also introduced the idea for an opposition process that will help assist in the evaluation of patent applications and to ensure again that the patents that are granted in South Africa meet the proper criteria. And ensuring and in looking at the patentability criteria, we're also examining this in greater detail to ensure that not only do we meet the international standards and international legal obligations and take into account the fact that these have evolved over time, but that the patentability criteria also reflects what is needed at a national level, in particularly in South Africa's context. Part of this process is also then to ensure that there's clarity when individuals and firms apply for patents, that they are very clear on the scope of information that is required as part of their patent applications. And that's really to ensure that the patents that are granted are not done so wrongfully. We could move on. Important part of the policy framework is to recognize the important role of voluntary licenses in South Africa. These voluntary licenses are measures that allow for greater generic production, manufacturing in South Africa, and again, to try to make medicines more affordable to South African citizens. As part of this phase, we've also recognized the important role of competition policy and legislation in facilitating access to medicines. One of the implications of patents is that they provide for exclusive rights, they provide for monopoly in the market, and there are occasions where there are some anti-competitive practices in this respect. And so competition policy and legislation becomes quite important in that respect. So the policy document also provides some attention to pursuing further work on understanding the linkages between competition and intellectual property. A part of this is also recognizing the importance that our competition authorities need to cooperate at an international level with other competition authorities as norms and guidelines are developed around the interface of intellectual property and competition. And so this is an important aspect of the work in this respect. We can move on. The other important part of the work in this phase, phase one, has been on international cooperation on intellectual property. And I'd mentioned earlier, of course, the objective of this is to ensure that there's coherence and consistency between South Africa's policy legislation, legislative reform, and the approaches that we are going to, that we take at the multilateral level in the WTO, for example, in the World Intellectual Property Organization, but also at the regional level in SADC and in our bilateral engagements in that respect. We need to ensure that in the evolution of the policy and the legislation that we comply with our legal obligations, that these are in fact taken particularly at the WTO, but also in WIPO and in other fora. But in looking at those international norms and standards, we need to take into account fully all the flexibilities that are provided in international law that allows us to adapt our legislation and our policy to meet our national development objectives. And it's also very important to recognize that while you have these international standards and while you have these international legal obligations, the manner in which countries apply it at a national level varies considerably. That diversity reflects different national imperatives, it reflects different national interests, and so within the framework of international law, there's considerable flexibility to apply intellectual property to suit your national interests, and that is what we need to be focused on, and the policy document points us in that direction. Could move on. I did mention that there are a number of areas that have been identified for future work. We have not engaged on this directly as yet, but these are areas that further work is going to need to focus on. And in particular, we want to understand much more carefully and closely and in detail the linkages between intellectual property and intellectual property protection and our objectives for localization, for industrial development, for beneficiation, etc., to see how these interact. We also want to look at the linkages between IP and agriculture, biotechnology, genetic resources in South Africa, the protection of genetic resources in South Africa. Increasingly important is the linkages between intellectual property, environmental protection, climate change, green technologies, and we need to find the appropriate balances in approaching those questions. And very importantly also, we are looking to see how we can support informal inventors, small informers, small firms, individuals that develop certain products, invent certain products, and try to reach out to them and find ways to help them protect their intellectual property and gain some benefit from those inventions. Another area for work in future will be commercialization, how we use South Africa's inventions and intellectual property, trademarks and the like, to brand South African goods and to ensure that there's a good return, financial return on those for South African goods and services, looking at a range of different types of intellectual property protection, such as collective marks, certification marks, geographic indications, and the like. So this is to give more support to domestic industry. We could move on. Important part of the work, and some of this is already ongoing, particularly the first one on awareness and capacity building. There are efforts to reach out to the broader community to understand the role of intellectual property in economic development, to train people and firms on in respect of intellectual property, and this is something that needs to continue as we develop our intellectual property rights programs and policy and legislation. Importantly, too, we need to have a much more systematic monitoring and evaluation of our intellectual property regime in South Africa, make sure that we're bringing it up to date, make sure it's meeting the objectives that we have set out. So going forward, monitoring and evaluation is going to become a much more important feature of the overall framework for intellectual property in South Africa. And then again, a very important aspect of it is enforcement. It's one thing to have the laws on the books, to have very good laws and effective, but their efficacy and their effectiveness is dependent on enforcement. And so we need to ensure that we have the capacity in place to detect where there are violations of intellectual property and also to enforce it. So these are again items for further work. Two important points on this slide is just to note that the Copyright Amendment Bill and our Indigenous Knowledge Act that were at a fairly advanced stage of development when the policy was finally signed off by Cabinet. And so the document itself indicates that we would need to evaluate and monitor how those processes unfold to ensure that they are aligned with the broader IP policy objectives. So the fact that these had already been advanced and were already evolving does require some evaluation and monitoring to ensure that that there's consistency in the overall policy direction. And this is set out specifically, this objective is set out specifically in the strategy section of the document that was approved by Cabinet in 2018. As far as implementation goes, there's an intensive work program at the CIPC currently underway to implement the substantive search and examination that I mentioned earlier. The focus is on training patent examiners so that they're able to assess properly patent applications. There's also work underway to provide the ICT infrastructure that will assist in that process. And a lot of this work is going on in collaboration with the European Patent Office and with WIPO, where there's considerable experience and expertise, which we draw on to assist in the implementation of this this work at the CIPC. I think this is the last slide, Chair. There are some legislative reforms proposals that are underway from the department and from the CIPC working together. We are looking at soon finalizing the development of a Patents Act. We have developed a draft bill, it's under preparation and will soon, we hope, be submitted to Cabinet for approval, and then it will be subjected to public consultations. So some of the points I've made earlier about the reform of the Patents Act, that act is a 1978 act. It needs to be updated. So we are submitting this bill, and at some point we hope it will serve before the before Parliament. In parallel with that, we are developing a there's a development of a Designs Act. A draft bill has been prepared and again will be submitted to Cabinet alongside the Patents Bill, since these are related, cover related material. And then finally, we are working on a WIPO agreement. This is the Madrid protocol. We have we are looking to accede to that protocol. And the advantage of this protocol is that once we join, once we accede to that protocol, South African companies, their brands would be protected in multiple jurisdictions amongst all the members of that protocol. So their brands would be protected in those jurisdictions. And this is a simple and cost-effective way to provide some degree of protection to South Africa's brand. So that is work that is underway in the department. And again, we will be submitting this to Cabinet and then to Parliament in due course. And this is part of our work on the implementation of the of the policy. So I think I believe that's the end of the presentation, Chairman. I think we've come to the end of it. And just to thank you for the attention. As I mentioned, I have colleagues with me that will help if there are any questions that arise. But thanks very much for the attention of the committee.
Okay, Ambassador, let me thank you for the presentation. But I maybe upfront indicate that it does seem to be a process that is taking a bit of time, because in where we looking at the presentation, the draft policy and the phased implementation dates back to 2017. And obviously that actually does create a bit of synergy. And the point of introduction of the issue to the portfolio committee, because obviously you do know that the portfolio committee members retention has been actually quite low. So which means all the members of the portfolio committee may need to get some sense how the introductory part of the policy and legislation, we are able to actually have a good background, particularly when we actually have a policy and phases of implementation. Obviously, the background becomes crucial so that we get a good sense on the basis of where we're starting, where we work from, and what the kind of outcomes that is actually expected. Because obviously, in this space, it's actually quite important to monitor the developments and improvement, or what might be termed challenges when you look at the matter. Let me just say that's maybe the first observation. And I think maybe the question on our part will be just to say, how is the DTIC team, which is actually a trade policy negotiation and cooperation, managing, and what are the kind of areas which are actually challenges that may have to be looked at closely. So I would actually open up for comments and questions, but on my part, it's just the comments which I'm making is to open up on a process where we'd actually be able to get the portfolio committee having a good background to process and being able to actually help to work with the DTIC team on managing and actually implementing the process moving forward. We are at the point where we are going to ask for comments and questions from members of the portfolio committee. And may I actually just ask honorable members if ever there are any comments and or questions on the presentation made by the DTIC a team led by DDG Xavier Karim, who's the DDG ambassador, Karim. Chair? Thank you. Can I open up for members? Any hands, Chair. Secretaries?
Chair, we have Ms. Mantashe, followed by Mr. Tring, followed by Mr. Mbuyani, Chair, at the moment.
Okay. Can we actually ask Honorable Mantashe, followed by Tring and Mbuyani in that order? Mantashe?
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the Ambassador and his team. Chair, I have a few comments to make in appreciating his presentation. I just want to make a comment to say I appreciate the fact that they say when this work was started, there was gazettes and everything else to conscientize the citizenry, but I would imagine that has not had a meaning in full impact to those who were in the past not exposed to them having a bite on this portion of the economy. I'm saying so, Chairperson, because I have in the Eastern Cape a person, Mr. Nomchongwana of East London, who has been battling for years to ensure that the medicine or the concoction that he makes that assists the Eastern Cape people with heart problems and high blood pressure to be patented or to be given a patent. But up to now, he has not meaning. I would imagine that there's a lot of those people who have their own things that are not recognized. I would love that a stride be made, at least to assist such people, Chairperson, because I have seen that in the presentation, he says there's a space for e-campaigns of awareness. I wish that awareness would make an impact on our people who had not had the chance to be in this space, Chairperson. Chair, again, I also want to say my wish is that when we consider that we don't trample on other countries' toes in as far as our international treaties are concerned, we as South Africa prioritize our own people first so that they can be part of this mainstream economy, Chair, in particular on the IP, because they have made so many innovations, and we have a lot of indigenous knowledge that we have, which has not been recognized. Can we prioritize our own as we will also look into a fact that we don't tremble on other treaties that we are part of? And I so wish, Chair, we can be at NOBA even not in this committee, just the treaties that they are referring to when they say we must be live to them as we proceed with the work of this IP that we are busy with, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Honorable String.
thank you, Chair. Chair, I think firstly, just to appreciate the presentation and Ambassador Karim on the crisp presentation that he has given to us. Secondly, I want to agree with you that this committee also be involved in the processes with regards to the draft bill and other drafts that may be in the pipeline within the department. But my questions, Chair, just three simple questions. Firstly, to the Ambassador, what role does South Africa have in the Nagoya Protocol with respect to access to genetic resources, and what is the spectrum or the nature of these genetic resources? The second question is that, firstly, the statement there, we see that India has a medical or drug policy which makes important medicines and drugs available that are needed for the population available at reduced rates, which overrides Big Pharma and your big monopolies with respect to these important medicines or drugs. So how does this particular draft policy or draft bill assist our national drug plan in promoting public health as compared to India's, for example? And then my last question is, how does the IP interface with localization and beneficiation, agriculture and biotechnology, amongst others that were mentioned in the presentation? Are there any cases that we have to speak of where there is this interface with the benefits to localization, beneficiation, and so on? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Mine is just a comment around the issues of comparative advantage in terms of trade liberalization, privatization, and also the process of infant industry promotion to develop South Africa's economy. How are they having the programs, and what is the program moving forward in terms of protecting the infant industry that we have in, and our creative industry especially? And also trying to check, how can they be able to fast track the issues of the draft in terms of the Patent Act? Just a comment also, Chair, on the issue of the pharmaceutical investment. I don't know, because we're talking of Gaha and as part of the process. Are they also dealing with the process of a trade liberalization in terms of Dhaka? We know Eastern Cape is producing a lot of ganja now, but it's not well established. I don't know how do they have programs in terms of dealing with those ones as well. And also the collaboration with the YPOCHE, how is the process moving forward? Unfortunately, I'm on the street, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, stay roadworthy, Honorable Mbuyane, and safe. Thank you very much. Can I go back to the ambassador and the team in the comments and questions from members?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair, and I will ask my colleagues to come in as they to help provide fuller answers. I think the first question, first of all, thank you for all of the questions. I think all very good questions. Clearly, intellectual property is a complex field. It's also contested in many respects about what type of protection is needed, where, under what type of intellectual property. And so this is really an important area. The point that maybe I should start with the points that you made, Chair. I think your comments about the time that it takes for these processes to unfold is quite long because of the complexity and the contestation around the different areas of intellectual property. So we need lots and lots of consultations, intergovernmental level, and then with stakeholders in developing the policy, thinking around this. And it may be useful if we consider, if I know members are extremely busy with their current work program, but if there's a possibility for an extended session where experts could come in and perhaps have more time to elaborate the policy thinking, some of the constraints, some of the challenges around it. So that may be something for the committee to consider and for you to consider, Chair. Within the department, there are different, as you mentioned, divisions or branches that are involved on intellectual property. We have CCRD, the DDG, there, Evelyn, very well. So they take responsibility for leading the processes around the development of national legislation. But from our side, from our branch, trade policy, negotiations and cooperation, we approach it from the perspective of our international engagements. We are responsible for the engagement at the WTO, for instance, but also when this issue comes up in bilateral or regional level. So there has to be close coordination between us, between the two branches on this. And of course, the CIPC is a very important body that reports to the department, to the minister, and we have to work closely with them. So it is part of the reason for the time that it takes is that the consultations have to be with all of the relevant bodies. The point that Honorable Mantash raised is really a very critical issue. The intellectual property regime in South Africa traditionally was not necessarily geared towards supporting the type of informal or small inventors that she is talking about. And one of the policy directives that is set out in the document that I've been speaking about is precisely to try to close those gaps. So part of it is an outreach, so people, more and more people are made aware of the importance of intellectual property, that they have access to that. But again, because it's a very technical and very legally based regime, for many small inventors, individuals, it's very difficult to access. So part of the work that we want to do is to ensure that there is greater efforts from government to reach out precisely to the types of individuals that you mentioned. You mentioned an individual from East London that has a medicine that they're trying to patent. So that type of assistance is needed. Sometimes it's very technically difficult, it's complex, but we're also looking at other options of providing some degree of protection. And in the patents bill that is being advanced, we're also considering the role of utility models as one way of providing a degree of protection to such type of inventors and inventions. I should also mention in this context that we have an Indigenous Knowledge Act, which is yet to come into force. The regulations are still being developed by another department, not by the DTIC. And when those regulations are put in place, then that act will come into effect. And the essential objective of the act is to provide the kind of protection to communities and to traditional knowledge in South Africa, so that if there's a company or a firm that comes in, sees the benefit of some traditional medicine, identifies what the active ingredients are in those particular medicines, but then takes it out and commercializes it on a bigger scale, and this is in the main the big companies, mainly multinationals. But if they do that, there is an element of disclosure of where they get the active ingredients from. But there's more importantly that there is some form of benefit sharing. It's very complex. It's not straightforward, but that is the objective of the Act, to provide protection to intellectual property and that arises from traditional and Indigenous knowledge. Chair, the second set of questions from Honorable Thring, I'm going to have to turn to one of my colleagues, I hope, will be able to answer on the Nagaya Protocol on genetic resources. In general, of course, we have legislation in South Africa protecting genetic resources, trying to ensure that there's a sustainable management of South Africa's genetic resource pool in terms of flora and fauna, etc. But this falls under the Department of Environment, and they lead on that. But perhaps one of my colleagues would have some insight into
what our role is and what we're trying to achieve in that context. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask Honorable Tring to advise me on his second question. I missed that, but I did pick up the third question with respect to raising issues about the IP interface with localization and agriculture, etc. And I think this is really work that is for the built-in agenda. I think we're aware that the type of intellectual property protection that is provided, how you patent, the strength of the patent, how easy it is to get patents, are all questions that are related to innovation, how inventions are applied for industrial purposes, and innovation and technology are essential for industrial development. So we look at examples around the world. We've looked at, for example, how China has developed its capabilities on intellectual property, on patents, and there may be lessons to be learned from that, and how you increasingly improve domestic capabilities for inventions, for innovation, that feeds into your industrial processes, and it allows you to advance. So you're not, it's a process that needs to unfold, and you need an appropriate legal framework and a framework for intellectual property protection that facilitates that type of trajectory. So the questions in detail, I think, will be the subject of further work in the department and in consultations. Other than to say that there's clearly a link between, there are many tools to promote industrial development. Intellectual property is an important aspect of that overall strategy. I'm sorry I missed the second question, and perhaps get an opportunity to hear it again and have another. Yes.
If I may. With your permission.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Follow up, repeat the question, because the ambassador said he didn't pick it up clearly. Honorable Tring, go ahead.
Okay. I use the example of India, and just some of my reading has indicated that India has a medical policy which allows imported medicines, and I'm not sure whether it's in particular the genetic development of certain medicines, which are needed for the population, come through at a reduced rate, which in a sense overrides your big pharma, big pharmaceuticals, and your who have actually a monopoly over certain medicines and certain drugs. So how does this particular draft assist our national drug plan in promoting public health, as indicated in the presentation, as compared to what is taking place in India? Thank you, Chair.
There was also, Honorable Mbuyane, Ambassador, you said there was other question that you were not
I did get the questions from Honorable Mbuyane. I just missed the second question from Honorable Tring.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I'm sure that clarifies.
That does. Well, I'm not an expert on the Indian drug plan. What I was pointing to in the presentation were a number of interventions that have been identified in the policy to promote domestic production. The one is about trying to look at the intellectual property regime and encourage through that and make sure that we encourage and facilitate domestic production. That would be the first element of that. How do we support greater domestic production of medicines and medical supplies of various types in that respect? The second was the role of parallel imports
In the current patent regime, there is it provides for parallel imports, but it's not quite clear exactly how that would apply. Now, at an international level, this is allowed, and part of the reform that we're looking at is to make sure that this is clarified. And so where there are jurisdictions around the world, other countries that provide and produce a source of supply of affordable medicines, South Africa wants to use this provision to import those products, even though they may have patents that have not run out in South Africa. Generic producers, say in India, we could source from India under that provision. Then, with respect to the other point we talked about was about compulsory licensing. Again, here the South African legislation provides for compulsory licenses, but it's quite onerous and it's difficult to apply that in cases where the patents remain in place. There's insufficient production and supply in South Africa. Government can resort to issuing a compulsory license that requires that producer to expand production in South Africa at a lower cost. But that process to do that is quite onerous in South Africa. So some of the reforms that we're looking at is to streamline that process and bring it more in line with what is permissible at the WTO. This was also a very important evolution at the multilateral level, and South Africa needs to catch up, so to speak. And this is one of the ideas in the policy document. The other important aspect of access to medicine in South Africa is the role of the voluntary licenses. And again, here the idea is through these voluntary licensing, where South African generic producers produce medicines through licenses issued by international companies, that they do so at an affordable rate and make it more widely available in South Africa to address some of the medical issues and health concerns in South Africa. So those are some of the key elements that the document points to of work that is needed to, we need to pursue in order to make medicines more affordable in South Africa and to support our public health objectives. Honorable Mbuyane raised a number of questions about comparative advantage, the role of pharmaceuticals, questions of trade liberalization with respect to cannabis, etc. And I'm not quite sure the direction of the question in particular, but what I wanted to say that in this respect is that that we have an intellectual property regime in South Africa. A lot of it has been put in place in a previous era and needs to be updated and brought in line with not only the constitutional objectives that we've set out, but also brought in line with evolution and development at the international level. And so part of the legislative reform in South Africa in intellectual property would need to try to deal with that. What's very clear to us is that intellectual property protection and intellectual property that gives rise to new technologies and new inventions and new ways of doing things are very important for your industrial development. And so one would, when you talk about, when the question of comparative advantage is raised, the notion behind that is that countries specialize in what they produce and what they are able to produce at any given point in time. So in South Africa's case, our comparative advantage would be seen to be our mineral production, and that is the mainstay of the economy. But that's not to say that we can't develop a stronger industrial base. We've seen many other countries that have become industrial powerhouses over periods of time with the right policies that are put in place, and if there's proper follow through on that. And within that space, there's also an important role for intellectual property and the type of intellectual property regime that we have in place. We need to ensure that our IP regime is supportive of that trajectory of industrial development. What it means in specific areas may vary. How you apply it will vary. One needs to take into account different interests, but the trajectory should be in the direction of facilitating technological development, using that technology, those inventions, for industrial applications, so that we move up the value chain and industrialize. I think there was a question about collaboration, but I'm afraid I'm not sure I got what that was. And the question of cannabis and trade liberalization, this has not been formally proposed in any of our engagements thus far, that South Africa should be looking for markets through tariff liberalization or reducing our own tariffs in this respect. But I suspect as the regulations around cannabis become clear and clearer, those types of issues would need to be taken up at the appropriate time. I'm sorry if I've taken too long, Chair. I'm trying to answer as best I can. I'm not sure if any of the colleagues, if you'd want to invite any of the colleagues to supplement my my answers. Mr. Nkomo is available. He's an expert in this area. Perhaps he could assist on some of the questions that I missed, perhaps also on the Nagoya protocol in particular. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, let me just say I'm sure the colleagues can actually come in, but the last question was actually very interesting on my side, that there is already a cooperation on areas where, in terms of agriculture, although the terminology, I'm sure we should actually agree on it. Honorable Mbuyane said Daha, you'd say cannabis. And we know for sure in terms of the geographic and environmental area, Lesotho, Eswatini, almost is on the belt, geographic, we say agricultural belt, where those products actually are identified as prosperous. So I think because there's also space where when the decision was taken in a court on how the relationship of, you know, citizens and the product, and potentially I think the big area was that there's a huge opportunity health-wise and in terms of a product relating to a textile or clothing that was actually looked at that point. Because obviously over years, their focus was around it being a smoking product. But now we do actually know that there are health issues, positive impact around that. There's clothing, textile side as well. So there's huge potential for manufacturing of products around that. So can I actually then just say, noting that point, I would actually ask if ever there are some of your colleagues who want to comment on the first lot of questions that we've just got the ambassador to respond to. We'll just check if there's any follow-up from your colleagues. Thanks, Ambassador. I'm sure we can actually check which colleague of yours in the team wants to comment on the earlier questions. Then we can make a follow-up to check if ever there's any further question from members. Ambassador and the team?
I would like, maybe Marumu can help us on a couple of the points. I would like to invite Marumu.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Marumu Nkomo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, DDG. Honorable Chair, let me deal first and foremost with the question raised by the Honorable Mantashe about really the way in which people at grassroots level can benefit from the IP system. And I think the DDG already did address that aspect, and he rightly acknowledged that the IP system in particular, where patents is concerned, came from a different era, and in fact it's tended to be out of reach for the vast majority of people. And indeed, the policy as well as the implementation through the legislative amendments that we're looking at deal quite decisively with that aspect. So for instance, one of the interventions that's proposed is to introduce a fee reduction on patents for individuals and small business. Another very important intervention is making use of what's called the Inventor Assistance Program. Now, that's a program by the World Intellectual Property Organization, whereby the services of IP law firms, which are very, very, very expensive. It's a program where WIPO has been able to get IP law firms to volunteer to provide their services on a pro bono basis. So countries that are part of the Investor Assistance Program, their citizens can benefit from that. And indeed, South Africa has joined, and through the CIPC, we're looking at how that can be rolled out in South Africa as part of the policy process and the legislative reforms. And another important intervention is that we're looking at ways in which the IP profession has been quite exclusionary. If you look at the demographics and the profile of the profession, it's quite an untransformed profession. And one of the areas that we're looking at is how the IP profession can be more accommodating to people from previously disadvantaged backgrounds. So those are quite important interventions that will ensure that the IP system will benefit a broader range of South Africans. The DDG, you know, asked me to come in particular on the question by the Honourable Fring on the Nagoya Protocol. Now, this instrument, an important aspect of it is that it deals with the concept of biopiracy. That is where, you know, large multinational firms would make use of genetic resources of countries without acknowledging them to develop various products, and there's no benefit that accrues to the indigenous people in those countries. So the Nagoya Protocol deals with this. It brings forth concepts such as access and benefit sharing, whereby those entities have to show how they've shared the benefits of the products that emerge with the indigenous communities. Now, in South Africa, we have already implemented that, as the DDG rightly said, through the Environmental Affairs Department. And in particular, the piece of legislation that's relevant is the National Environmental Management and Biodiversity Act. Patents are relevant in that in 2005, and it came into effect in 2007, there was an amendment to the Patent Act that required that when you apply for a patent, you indicate whether biological resources have been used. And if yes, you have to prove that, in fact, you have complied with the National Environmental Management and Biodiversity Act process. That form is called a P26, which all patent applicants have to complete. And then finally, Honorable Chair, the question about India and the way in which India has dealt with the issue of access to medicines. Well, India is an important country in this regard. India took advantage of the fact that when it joined, you know, when the agreement on trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, or TRIPS, came into effect, India was not obliged to provide protection, patent protection for pharmaceutical products. And it used this to be able to develop the very substantial generic drugs industry, whereby it would kind of reverse engineer patented drugs from other jurisdictions. And it was able to deploy this policy tool to establish its itself as a huge player in the generics industry. And then it also, and then as it's in 2005, then it had to be fully compliant with the TRIPS agreement and then provide pharmaceutical products patent protection. But to retain its comparative advantage in this area, it then adopted various tools to ensure that it could continue to be what it became known as the pharmacy of the world. So many of those tools are tools that we have looked at and studied extensively in our policy, and some of them are implemented in the or are proposed to be implemented in the bills that we are putting forth. The DDG rightly made reference, for example, to the area of compulsory licensing, whereby you know, there can be you know, whereby companies in the right circumstances can be compelled to allow generic producers to produce. In South Africa, we've never made use of this, partly because our legislation is too restrictive to be able to practically utilize it, and secondly, because the Department of Health has been very effective in negotiating with the pharmaceutical industry on voluntary basis. And so another area is parallel importation, whereby the DDG rightly made reference to the fact that the Medicines Act in South Africa does provide for the importation of drugs which are cheap in other jurisdictions, but there are some constraints to using this policy tool in the Patents Act. And so these are some of the areas that we have looked at, studying best practice from India and other countries. So indeed, these approaches have definitely been studied, and we propose to tailor them in the most effective way possible to our local context through the implementation of the policy. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nkomo. We also have Chair Mr. Rory Waller from the CIPC that may also be able to assist the committee and give some insight into the work and the approach taken at the CIPC. I see that he's on the platform, and perhaps you would like to invite him to say a few words as well.
No, it's okay. It's in order. Ambassador, you can invite Rory Volo.
Mr. Volo, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, members of DG Karim, for the opportunity. I was coming in to see you as an observer, but I'm more than welcome to share a few insights as to what we are currently involving at the CIPC in order for us to deal with some implementation aspects of the first phase of the policy. I think most importantly, we have been involved in two areas. I think the DDGs did mention the aspect of substantive examination of patents. I'm glad to say that we're well on the way in terms of the training of our first batch and now into our second batch of examiners. Our first batch of examiners are well equipped to deal with the issues around how, as a country, we shall examine patents, also to deal with the patent criteria and patentability criteria as laid down internationally, and therefore they have received some of the best training globally. I should mention, Chairperson, that when I appeared at the portfolio committee quite a while ago now in person, in dealing with the annual report of the CIPC for the last year, I did mention that as far as implementation aspects that are currently undertaken by the CIPC, we seem to be running slightly ahead of the legislative component. And I think, Chairperson, you mentioned it in your opening remarks that this certainly is a challenge for us, and therefore I think that we need to work very, very closely with our colleagues, as we have been doing in terms of ensuring that the legislative aspects receive the attention that they require, and also for us to ensure that when we move forward with additional training requirements as well as infrastructure and dealing with those aspects in order to receive such patents, we are well equipped in order to do that. Our first batch that we had was 20, we lost two, we've got 18 who are currently dealing with real live patents that they are receiving using the criteria. We do know that it's still part of the training network, because we are not allowed to, obviously, in terms of legislation, our full reports, but they are dealing with those reports as if the legislation was particularly particularly amended, and therefore deleted that fully. We have received a second batch of patent examiner trainees who are well into their training program. It was a little bit disruptive, as we know, in terms of the lockdown, but we managed to deal with many aspects online and also to ensure that they maintain their training capabilities as well as training materials in order for them to continue along part of having them fully fledged patent examiners when their 2 years are up as far as that training is concerned. We have worked very, very closely with our colleagues, including Mr. Marume and Kumar Dasam and the DDG Karim and his team to ensure that we also have focused programs when it comes to working with the best in the world. We have got memorandums of understanding with the European Patent Office, and obviously we have worked extremely closely with IPO. But also we have worked closely with our BRICS colleagues. We have got a forum called the Heads of IP Offices and Work Streams and Roadmaps that deal with training. So we've received a lot of assistance from our colleagues in that particular group, which has been very valuable to our examiners. So as you can see, they've received some of the best training in the world, and we certainly are geared up and gearing up even further as an entity in order for us to deal with the legislative changes and what is required of us when it comes on stream. Moving on, the other aspect that we've also been dealing with is, I think, mentioned by the Honorable Mantash, is how do we empower the smaller entities in the SME sector of South Africa to understand the benefit and to access the benefit of the global IP system. So we have got we've been running a program for many years now, which is called IP for SMEs Capacity Development Program. This is in collaboration with WIPO, collaboration with our colleagues at the DTIC, colleagues in the Department of Small Business Development, CEDA, NIPMO, and research institutions. We have numerous programs dedicated to this. Last week or the week before, we had a fully fledged online program as well, dealing with how do we capacitize, and we're rolling this out on a national basis to all the provinces of communities that deal with aspects of how to train the trainer programs to ensure that the length and breadth of South African citizenry receive training and knowledge and education around the utilization of the IP system. And we're fully involved with that. When I mentioned the aspect of the BRICS collaboration as well, in terms of the various offices that we have, there's a dedicated roadmap and work streams that we report on almost on a quarterly basis within the particular group, and receive some of the best articles and best strategies that are available in order for us to also utilize them in South Africa. As we know, there was a massive explosion of the IP system in China, massive explosion in the number of applications that were received in the patenting system from that particular jurisdiction, and many of those have been from the smaller SME sector. So we draw strength and we draw experience from that particular collaboration that we have with the HIPO group, as we call it, HIPO, Heads of IP Offices, and therefore South Africa, I'm pleased to announce, is actually the head of the SME work stream in the BRICS group, and we have to develop strategies around that and utilize some of the services that we received from our partners. So we also, on an annual basis, together with DTIC and other partners, host what is called an IP and technology colloquium for SMEs and industrialization partners. The last one we had was called Propelling Innovation Towards Full-Scale Industrialization and Growth. We have to say that at those particular colloquium, which lasts for 2 days, we have participation from numerous sectors and numerous citizens from throughout South Africa, which come together with the inventions. We look at them. We have discussions about patentability and those particular aspects and criteria, and therefore we apply that knowledge to educate and make them aware of what the requirements are. I think Mr. Marumo also touched on the aspect that we're involved in, which we're quite proud of, which is called the Inventors Assistance Program. This was a program started by the World Intellectual Property Office, but South Africa was the fourth country in the world to sign up for that particular program. I'm glad to say that we have actually have granted patents through that particular program to South African citizens. We have many who apply. We've got a steering committee made up of experts, also across numerous government departments, and we work very, very closely with the Intellectual Property Lawyers Association, who deal with this aspect on a pro bono basis in order to assist small inventors. But because patentability criteria of new inventive step and industrial application is quite strict to meet, which is a global standard, many of them that we see are not patentable. So we might think you might have a great invention and it has to go through the strict criteria. But we have patented quite a few. I can share those stats with the committee in documented form so required. And we're glad that we continue year on year to receive more applications in this regard. Ms. Mantash, I know you extremely well. If you can give me some, and you have my email address, if you can supply me with some other details as to one that you want us to look at, and we will most certainly will do so from the CIPC and make sure that those go through the steering committee and provide the assistance accordingly when it comes to us assisting in the SME sector in dealing with the aspects of patents. But not only patents, we will also look at the full domains of trademarks, designs, and copyrights. So the bringing together of these IP experts is certainly one that ensures that our budding inventors get the pro bono assistance they require, and therefore we are fully fledged programs regarding that. I should also mention that CIPC, as far as our looking at our strategy and our IP strategies going forward, we are envisaging what we would call an IP learning academy. We have seen this work extremely well in other jurisdictions, also tapping on the aspects of commercialization and technology transfer. DG Karim did mention the aspect of economies that seem to do well, leverage off this type of space by utilizing the IT sector in order to grow in the technology as well as in invention space. And therefore, we want to, as CIPC, look towards the development of a learning academy within South Africa, where we can have training programs and also work very, very closely with our research institutions to provide documentation as well as technology transfer aspects in order for us to deal with that. So we're quite busy in this space. I'm glad to say that in the last financial year, we had more than 30 education and awareness events on a national scale. We're hoping to ramp that up, and we are ramping it up because we're utilizing our online platforms now. We have a lot of strategies regarding that. We're hosting a lot of webinars and training aspects for our SME sector, and basically to deal with putting a lot of knowledge in the hands and technology transfer aspects in the hands of our SMEs to access the IP system as well as to leverage of it the economic benefit for which it holds. Those are my few words, Chairperson, and I thank you for the opportunity to be an observer and to share some insights on the CIPC perspective. I thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. I'm not sure if ever there's any further colleague who would like to comment on the first round, and then I'll actually then ask if ever there are further follow-up questions from members. Ambassador?
I think that's fine, Chair. Maybe if there are further questions from committee members.
Okay. Let me just say the part of the cannabis, South African part, I think mainly there are two provinces, KZN and Eastern Cape. I just said South Africa, but those are the two provinces that actually were looked at, which connects us to Lesotho and Eswatini. So I think one was actually saying it will be a good thing to be able to actually look at the whole area in terms of how we build relations with the Southern African part, with the two countries, which are quite annexed to the area geographically. So the second point as well, I think one had most of the time when you go and get medication, one would actually be getting a question from the pharmaceutical, which is saying generic or non-generic. I don't think there's sufficient information for South Africans to be able to separate but in most cases, without knowing if ever it's higher in price, I always say generic, because you know, in my mind, I actually get this point that generic has to do with us, with South Africa, so it's actually locally generated or manufactured in terms of South Africa. So one would actually just respond in a way where one would speak towards having generic, because I don't know if it is better in price, better in quality, but the reality is that one automatically take a generic view. And in most cases, I do have a debate with some members of the family which actually collect medication on regular basis. What would be the difference or benefit? So I think maybe those are a few comments on my side. But I will ask that I check with the honorable members of the portfolio committee if ever there are any follow-up questions. Can I actually invite members, secretary? I'm not sure if ever there's any hands that are raised, or are there any members who would like to make a follow-up question and or comments? Can I invite honorable members to take the final round of questions and comments?
I don't see any hands, but Mr. Mulder put on his video. I would assume, I don't know if he wants to ask questions. No further hands then, Chair.
Oh, okay. Honorable Mulder, they say you want to see someone. You didn't raise the hand, but can I acknowledge you, Honorable Mulder?
Chair, thank you, but no, I'm fine, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I actually go back to the ambassador and the team? I think it was more of comments on my side. I think we can actually then allow the ambassador and the team, or the team and the ambassador, to round up. And obviously, we would actually have to follow up programmatically in terms of the issues that came before us today. Let's actually get Honorable Ambassador Xavier Karim, DDG, to actually check if ever there are any follow-up comments, and you can actually try and round up on your side, Honorable DDG.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairman. No, I think there's nothing much more to add except to indicate that I hope that you've received a copy of the policy document itself. And if the committee hasn't received it, we'll make sure that it is passed on to all the committee members, so that you have the base documents. And essentially, what I wanted to the key message I think that we wanted to leave with the committee is that we have an IP regime very well established in South Africa for many, many years. Unfortunately, that it's an old regime, and in many instances needs to be updated and reformed and brought up to date, both in terms of bringing it in line with South Africa's constitution, the objectives of our transformation, provision of public health in particular, but broader social economic development and intellectual property regime will need to undergo an evolution and a process of updating. In doing that, we have to be aware of what our international obligations are. But as I say that, I also want to highlight that those international obligations set standards which have a great deal of flexibility in the way that they are applied at a national level. And so you see a lot of variation in the way different countries apply the legislation or apply those rules and those international standards in their domestic context. So members should be aware that as we say that we're trying to meet international standards, that we're also recognize that there is flexibility there are ways of ensuring that the intellectual property protection regime in South Africa, as it evolves, is more geared to meeting the various social and economic objectives that we have set for ourselves. So in public health, there are processes underway or proposals that are going to be put forward that would try to take advantage of those international rules to take us in a direction of supporting public health, promoting industrialization, etc. Of course, in the context of lawmaking, there are different interests that will speak out. There are different views on intellectual property, and all of those have to be taken into account in making a judgment. It's a complex, difficult area to deal with, but it's really very, very critical in terms of meeting our overall social and economic objectives. So I just want to leave that with you, Chair. And of course, the department is always ready to assist the committee in whatever way we can. So thank you very much again for the opportunity, Chairman, and we are that will bring us to the end of our of this perhaps this portion of the your agenda today.
Okay, Ambassador and the team, let's actually thank you for being able to make time to engage with us. I'm sure you would actually be free to actually leave the meeting, because I'm sure we have covered the issues, and thank you for your very informative input and for your leadership of the team, Ambassador. Can we then actually proceed to the next item? Ambassador and the team, thanks very much.
Thank
Most
you,
appreciate.
Chairman. Thank you. Good
Most
morning
appreciate.
To everyone.
Morning. Okay, honourable members, can we move on to the next item on the agenda? If we can, it will be the minutes of the portfolio committee. There are five meetings we are able to convene in October. We will actually then be able to take those minutes and actually get members to comment and correct. Let's actually then have the first minutes. I had the 13, 20, 21, 23, and 27 October. I'm sure the secretariat, you can actually fly the copy of minutes. They were circulated yesterday, I think, yeah. And then you can actually then take each set of the minutes as projected on the screen. Honorable members, I would actually ask that I take you through the five sets of minutes we had for October. The first one is on the 13th of October, which actually had to do with the issue of trade negotiation, existing trade agreement, and trade relations. I think it's more on the space and capacity that we're looking at today, and there was consideration of minutes. Present, there were list of members, if you can scroll down, list of members which were present, scroll down further. We actually did also have apologies of the two members, McPherson and Yaku, if you can scroll down. The issue of attendance in terms of the DTIC, it was actually Ambassador Karim. And we actually had the discussions, which were listed below, which actually spoke to the comments one has made. And the agenda item is item two, if you can scroll down, was actually issue relating to the agenda adopted, moved by the members. So it was a briefing on the existing trade agreement and relation. The ambassador did take us through those issues which are listed. You can go down and scroll to the issue related to the briefing by the ambassador, which actually covered a lot of different areas. You can scroll down, which actually had those lists of issues identified by the ambassador. we did actually have an item 4, consideration of the draft minutes and the adoption. Those we're looking at the September sets of minutes, which was actually the different dates as reflected, which was the 1st of September, going down to the set of the 6th and the 7th of October, which were actually listed there. I think we did actually have those meetings agreed to. If you can scroll down, there was actually committee decision relating to the DDIC submitting responses of outstanding questions, which actually was listed. That furthermore, we resolved the secretary to circulate responses received on relation to previous meeting, which means those were questions which came up. And we did adjourn our meeting at 11:19. The next one was actually supposed to be the 20th of October meeting. So I think the 13th meeting is before you. I'm sure we can actually get members if ever they reflect, because I'm sure they were circulated. You're able to try and scroll through. Can we actually agree on the 13th October meeting as presented?
Chair, Mrs. Hermans, hand is up, Chair.
Honorable Hermans.
Chair, I wish to propose that we adopt the minutes as tabled. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Hermans. May I check if ever there's any seconder?
Ms. Mantashe, Chair.
Honorable Mantashe.
I rise to second the proposal, Chair. Thank you.
It is 13th of October minutes that are actually agreed to, unless there's an objection. Can I ask that we move to the next set, which is the 20th of October set of minutes. It was actually a meeting which actually had to do with the implementation of new legislation, Competition Amendment Act, and the briefing of the Competition Commission, Competition Tribunal on COVID-19 investigation and cases. That being the title, we did actually have members present, starting from the ANC, DA, FF Plus. Those are listed. You can scroll down. We do actually have apologies of the members listed there. And there was actually also attendance of the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. We did actually have the Competition Commission as well, Commissioner, and the Chief Economist being at present. And I think we can be able to actually look at the introductory part, which was the issues that were listed on the agenda, where the chair welcomed all present. We actually proceeded to look at the different issues which was presented, an update on the implementation of new legislation by the commissioner and the Dr. Pule from the DDIC. We did actually have the briefing by the Competition Commission and Tribunal on the COVID-19 investigation and cases. We went down, scrolled down item 4, and there were issues that were highlighted on the deliberations. We can scroll down to the next item, item 5. We actually did actually conclude our meeting around 12 midday on the 21st. Of October would be the next meeting. This is the 20th of October. Can I ask members to comment and or indicate that they are in agreement or accept the minutes? Honourable members,
is up, Chair.
Come again.
Mrs. Hermans and
Honourable Hermans.
Thank you, Chair. I propose that the minutes be adopted as tabled.
Okay. Can I actually get any seconder? Is the set of the 21st of October we have before us? Honorable members?
Yes, Chair.
Ms. Mwase.
Honorable Mwase?
Seconded, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I check if ever there's any objection? In the absence of any objection, can I ask that we proceed to the 21st October set of minutes? the 21st October set of minutes, we were looking at the implementation. Well, it has got lots of icon there, but I'm sure you'll sort that out. The update of the implementation of new legislation, which is Protection of Investment Act, and there was actually an update on the new legislation on the Legal Metrology Act. We actually received those two presentations on that legislation. Present were the listed members, if you can scroll down. And we did actually have the different parties as well represented. We received also the apologies, which were listed before us. If you can proceed and scroll down. We actually had an attendance of the trade industry, Ambassador Karim. And I think we did have Dr. Chetty, who was present, and Dr. Dimana. We actually did also the chief director. Attendance of the national regulator for compulsory specification, NRCS. We did actually have the National Metrology Institute of South Africa, the MISA, which were represented. I did actually have issues which actually spoke to a representative meeting and the rest of the issues relating to apology as stated above, and the presentation, which was actually summarized, and an issue where the adoption of the agenda was accepted. Item 2, update of the implementation of new legislation. We did take a presentation. And item 3, we did actually take presentation of the update of the implementation of the new legislation, which was Legal Metrology Act. We did actually have presentations by those representing those structures. If you can scroll down. Secretariat, and we did actually have a resolution where the committee resolved that the DDIC, the MISA, and NRC would submit a written response to questions. And we actually had to look at that around the response by the 26th of October. I'm sure we try and actually follow up on that most of the time. And if not, I'm sure Secretariat, you are going to help us to make sure that what we agree upon gets implemented. We did agenda at 11:33, and our next meeting was supposed to be the 23rd of October. Can I place the minutes before the committee and indicate if ever there's any comments, questions, correction, before we actually take a view that the record was a true reflection of what happened? Honourable members?
Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Thring, Chair?
Honourable Thring?
I'm sorry, I may have missed, I think in the sets of minutes, my name. I think from the DA members, just the Freedom Front. And I think in the last two sets of minutes, it may appear as if my name is either not there and or there's no apology. But I think in all of the minutes meetings, I either attempted to join in for a few minutes and then gave my apologies. Maybe one where I sent my apologies where I wasn't able to attend at all.
Okay.
But I haven't seen my name actually in the minutes that I've been.
So is it on the two sets, Honourable Three? Two sets, this one and the previous one?
And the previous one, that's correct.
Oh, let me just check on this one, Secretary. Let's actually scroll up the one to look at attendance and apology for this one particularly. We can look at the 21st one, but let's look at this one, Secretariat, so that at least we can respond to Honourable Thring. Secretariat?
Chair, we're just waiting for Margot to fly to chair.
Sorry, Margot. If you can fly to the set we just considered, which is 23rd October. Honourable Thring wants to verify the record. Just scroll down and let's see if there's any mention of Honourable Thring. I think Honourable Thring, you're right that you're not reflecting at all.
I was present at this particular meeting, Chair. I may have left. may have left a little early, but certainly the previous one, I think the same. One, I was there throughout the meeting.
Chair.
Okay.
We'll make the corrections, Chair.
Oh, let's actually note that, and then make correction. We'll check on both, Honourable Three. We'll actually then check how actually the record has been reflected. But I think in the communication as well, which you did, I'm sure Secretary should have the record. So can we note that, Honorable Thring? We'll follow through. Are there any further comments on the minutes of the 23rd October, besides the correction that we need to follow through with Honorable Thring?
21st October.
Can I just check with members if ever there's agreement that this is a true reflection of what happened on the 23rd? Honorable members, for the 23rd October set of minutes.
Chair, is it 21st, Chair?
Is it 21st?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, if all right, 21st set of minutes. Or the next one, obviously, I did say 23rd would be the next set of minutes. Yeah. Okay. Let's check if ever there's any acceptance or mover of the acceptance of the minutes with those amendments. Or verification and checking, honourable members.
I think members have...
No, they haven't absconded, I know. And they haven't been disconnected.
No.
they're trying to read again and just to confirm. Honourable members? Yes. Honourable Montashe?
I wish to confirm that the minutes are a true reflection of that meeting.
Honourable Montashe moves acceptance.
Okay.
Yes, Honourable Hammond.
I second the adoption of the minutes as tabled.
Honourable Hammond seconds Montashe. Any objections? In the absence, can I ask that we proceed to look at the next set of the minutes, which is obviously the 23rd of October set. If you can have Marco reflecting on that, the minutes are agreed to. 23rd October, sets of minutes. Marco, let's actually get present. I think we were looking at the NLC. It was actually the discussion on the recommendations on the process. Present were the members listed. And then we actually did have, if you can scroll down on the members that were present. And then we actually did have apologies, members which were listed there. And then we actually move on to introduction. It's more to actually what we have as issues relating to the meeting. Item 2 on the agenda, if you can scroll up, was the discussion regarding the committee processes in making recommendations with respect to the chairperson of the NLC, of the board of the NLC. We did actually have resolution around the issue relating item 3 on that one, and then we did adjourn the meeting, which is item 4. We finished the meeting around, if you can scroll down, 14:15 on the 27th of October was supposed to be the next meeting. This is the 23rd October meeting. Can I actually just get members to speak to the acceptance or non-acceptance of the minutes, honourable members?
Chair, Mrs. Hammonds, hands, Chair.
Honourable Hammonds.
Chair, I propose the adoption of the minutes tabled.
Honourable Hammonds move acceptance of the minutes. Can I get, if there's any seconder? Any seconder, honourable members?
Chair, I think it's safe for me to second. My name also does reflect correctly that I was present in the meeting. I second, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Thring. Can I check if ever there's any objection? In the absence, Secretary, we can fly the next set of minutes, which is the last set in terms of what we have before us, 27th of October. Let's actually then look at that, because it was trade, industry and competition briefing on the master plans. So So we did actually have the presence of those listed under the different parties. Can you continue scrolling down? There was also apologies, which we actually have on that meeting. Remember, even my apology on that meeting, which was listed, and there was actually the attendance, DGIC minister, deputy minister, the DG, which were actually present. There were issues which were listed, which I'm sure members will be able to confirm that there were those actually introductory issues that were sent and the issue of apologies linked to that. If you can scroll down to item 2, a briefing by the DGIC on the status of the master plans. Further, we can scroll down, Secretariat. We can scroll down. There was actually the adjournment, which was 11:20, and I think there was actually a record of the 28th of October minutes that will follow. So, but I think for the minutes that we have before us, this is the last set of minutes of the meeting we had. Can I just check if ever there's any mover for the acceptance of the minutes?
Mrs. Hammonds, Chair, hands is up.
Honorable Hammonds.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I wish to propose adoption of the minutes as tabled.
There's a mover for the adoption. Can we actually get the seconder? Can we get a seconder? Honourable members? Honourable members? I can see they are very slow, but we're almost done. Honourable members, you can slow down nicely, but don't stop contributing.
Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honourable Mulder. Okay, thank you very much for seconding. Can I just check if ever there's an objection? In the absence of any objection, can I actually then confirm that the set of minutes we have before us are actually reflecting through record of the engagement that took place in this portfolio committee? So I think this was the last item on the agenda, honorable members. If we can actually then be able to say, tomorrow we do not have the portfolio committee meeting. We will be having management committee, and we are hoping that by the weekend, you will actually get a circulation of what issues we'll be able to focus us in the coming week. We are actually following up on processes and information to make sure that what we actually agree upon in terms of portfolio committee meetings program in the coming week, it's confirmed and it's actually implementable for the program moving forward. We are hoping to actually make more work more clearer before we close for our recess by the end of this calendar year. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I would actually thank you for your participation. And the meeting stand adjourned. Thanks a million. Thank you for your participation.